Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, your weekly pod to help you save and make more money. My name is Michelle Baltazar. I'm the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. We've covered property investing in previous podcasts, but it truly is a topic that gets requested regularly. In this episode, we want to touch on the key jargon and maybe the most often heard principles about property investing that you kind of hear a lot about, but for the most part, nobody has taken the time to explain them. And if you stick around until the end of this episode, we're going to talk about the top three emotional traps when you're a beginner investor and what to do with them. Now, I'm going to need help on all of those topics. So we've invited a property expert today. His name is Damien Collins. Damien is the chair of Westbridge Funds Management, and he is also the managing director at Momentum Wealth. He started his career as a chartered accountant before becoming a professional property investor with more than 30 years' experience under his belt. Based in Perth, Damien was the president from 2018 to 2022 of the Real Estate Institute of Western Australia, which has more than 9,200 members. Damien, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, Michelle.
Now, you've recently published a book called Property Investing Roadmap, How to Build an Income from Property for Life. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
Now, in this book, you dedicated an entire chapter called Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics, What People Don't Tell You About the Property Market. I bet you had fun working on that chapter. Now, in it, you said that median prices, which is often quoted in the press, can be misleading. How so?
Well, Michelle, the median price is the one that's commonly used across the country, not only on a city-by-city basis when you're comparing Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, Adelaide, but also down to suburb levels. And you look at the median price in different suburbs. And people often think, well, if that's the median price and perhaps the median price in your suburb or area has gone up 10% last year, that means your property has gone up or all properties have gone up 10%. But that's not true. There's quite a difference in the underlying changes of values even within that suburb. And there's lots of things that go into the median price. It's quite a crude measure. There's things that affect it, like renovations. I've seen examples where a suburb's getting rejuvenated and looks like the property prices are growing dramatically, potentially 10, 15% consistently per annum. But if you strip out the fact that a lot of the people in that area are spending maybe hundreds, 200,000, 300,000 on renovations, that's not taken into account in the median. So it over-exaggerates the capital growth in that area. So there's so many things that are wrong with the median. It's a useful tool, at least, because it's the thing that's most common out there. But I wouldn't be relying on the median price and changes in median prices to determine where I would invest my next dollar in property.
Now, I know that it would probably take a day to go through all the top hacks or the things that you have to do so you can really look under the bonnet and not just look at median prices. But can you give me an example of some practical tips on how can you know, well, what really is the right price that I should be looking at when I'm investing in a particular location?
Firstly, you've got to look at the composition of properties. So is it more houses? Is it more villas, townhouses? Because an area might show, if it's got a lot of villas or apartments, perhaps, it might show a lower overall capital growth rate. And that's historically because houses with land grow in more. But that doesn't mean that a house in that suburb or that location might not do particularly well. It might actually substantially outperform the median growth in that particular suburb. So starting point is assessing the composition of the properties in that market. What's percentage of houses, villas, townhouses, apartments, and that gives you some idea that if it's a bit lower, it may not be because of the values of the houses in that area underperforming. It's just that there's a lot more, perhaps newer apartments that are growing less in value, because the median is obviously the one in the middle when they're assessing what the values are. And then the second thing is looking at, how much renovations have been done, what value add has been done in that area. And looking at that, you see, well, if people have spent a lot of money on their properties, well, maybe that median price growth is not all real growth. It's actually value add. And that doesn't come up. If you spend $700,000 on a property spend $100,000 and you sell it for $850,000, it looks like it's gone up $150,000 in the statistics, but actually it's only gone up $50,000 because you've added $100,000 of value. And I think the most important thing, Michelle, for investors when you're looking at the median price, too many people rely on that is, oh, well, that what's happened in the past will happen in the future. And we know historically that's certainly not guaranteed, and often the opposite can occur. And so I really encourage investors, be careful with the median price. Don't base your decisions on what's happened in the past. You've got to be looking at what's going to happen in the future. What are the demographics? Is there a lot of demand drivers in that suburb? But importantly, limited supply. That's a really key thing as a property investor. You want to invest in areas that have got strong demand. So is it close to transport, or is there new infrastructure going in that might mean that more people want to live in that area, or it makes their commutes easier? Is it changing demographically? We go back in history and look at the census figures, looking at the average incomes, and if we see trends over the decades, and particularly in the last few censuses, where people are then becoming a higher income, well, that's a good trend as well. It shows you the people in there are moving in more affluent, more likely to pay more for properties, for rents, and also for sale as well. So it's really critical that you understand what's happened in the past. The median price just gives you a rough average of what the values are in that suburb. But what that doesn't mean is what's going to happen in the future. Then there's a lot more you've got to deep dive into to pick the next property winners that are going to grow substantially in the decades ahead.
And just touching on your point about renovations, and I'm just putting myself in the shoes of a beginner property investor who probably looks at domain.com.au as their first step. But how would I know if my neighbors have done major renovations? It feels overwhelming. There's a lot of data and you just don't know how to put all the pieces together.
Well, you're exactly right. You're not going to know generally house by house, but you can certainly, you've got to get a sense of that suburb and that neighborhood. So by driving around, going to home opens, start talking to local real estate agents, buyer's agents, if they're buying in that area, should know the suburb well and what's been going on. So you can get a sense and just chatting to people who are experts in their field in that area about what's been going on. So I would certainly, when I go to home opens, I'm always talking to the agents, tell me what's going on in the suburb, what's happening. And you really get a good, who's moving in. You've really got to delve into that and just foot shoe leather. You get out in the shoes and wear your soles out, go through the home opens. You've got to get a good understanding because if you make the wrong investment decision in property, it can set you back 10 or 15 years towards your retirement goals versus making the right decision. So it's worth investing that time and energy, and there's no other way to do it than unless you rely on experts like buyer's agents, you've got to get out and do it yourself.
Now, from your experience, how much time do you need to allocate in researching? Because I can just imagine if you're a young family, you've got the kids, you've got sports on the weekend. I know friends who maybe spend 3 to 6 months just kind of scouting the area before they, take the leap. But what do you think is a fair time period where you're most likely to get a really good property purchase?
Oh, I think absolutely it's going to take months and months and months because you've got to narrow it down firstly to the suburbs and the locations that you're going to buy in. And particularly if you're coming in a bit green and you really don't know where to buy, you've got a big canvas to start with, and it may not even be necessary in your home city. And that's another issue for a lot of people. What we find, Michelle, most people, if they go and do it on their own, they end up buying a property near where they live. And that's because they know that area and it's convenient for them, and that's what they end up doing. But from a diversification point of view, that's not great because you already got your home there and then you've now got an investment property very close to your home. You're really putting a lot of your eggs in that one basket. So it really has got to be top level down. What's the best cities? What's the best to invest in, which have got the best prospects for capital growth? Understanding then those suburbs and then going out and looking at the suburb, go to the cafes, go and talk to the agents, go through the home open, see what's in demand. Because this is a rental as well, you've got to find out what appeals to tenants also. And so certainly I think you should be spending 3 to 6 months at least. But it's such a big investment. I mean, we're talking about in Sydney, the median price, a property in Sydney is $1 million. And even in the other capital cities, we're talking about $600,000-$800,000. It's such a big investment. If you're going to buy that much in shares, I'd expect you to do a lot of research as well. And certainly the same is for property. And that's the critical thing, going back to that median price. Not all properties grow at the same rates. You've got to make that right selection. But if you get that one that grows 2% more per annum than the average, that's how you make substantial money in property.
So did you say 2% per annum above the average? So those are roughly the kind of numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. So if the median capital growth in any of our capital cities, let's say over the next 20 years, is 5%, just as an example, there will be properties that grow at 7%. Doesn't sound like a lot, but when you extrapolate that consistently over 20 years, it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars extra in wealth that you can create. And that's why it's worth spending that extra time and energy, not to get an average property that's just going to do the same as the market, the one that is going to outperform. Because in that 5% average capital growth rate, there'll be properties that do 7%, there'll be properties that do 3%. So you want to make sure that you're in the property that's doing 7%, because that's going to be the one that gives you all the wealth to continue to build your property portfolio.
Now, this is going to be a real test. Very quickly, on old versus new properties, you just talked about limited supply. So we imagined that there'd be all these new properties coming in, but a lot of people are told new properties are too expensive, and the composition of old versus new properties in a city. What are the key considerations for people right now?
Well, they've both got pros and cons. And so what I like to do is say to, because people always go, what's the best investment? You know, and it really depends on your circumstances. So if you've got really strong cash flow, you've got a tolerance for lots of repairs and maintenance, then I would suggest maybe a older house on a decent parcel of land is going to be a better investment, because ultimately land grows in value, the buildings fall away, and 40, 50 years later, they're not worth much. It's the land underneath them that's the value. So if you've got a strong tolerance for an old house that's going to have lots of problems, you're not going to get a great tenant, you're not going to get great rental returns, but that might be going to get better capital growth, that might be good for you. Now, a newer property has got other benefits, but it generally, because when you buy a newer property, there's a higher component of what you're buying is in the building value. And that building value is going to stagnate and likely decline over the next 30, 40 years while the land value will grow. So you may get less capital growth. Your newer property, because it will be no longer shiny and new, it's certainly not as bad as cars. You know, we all know when we drive the car out of the car yard, we've lost 10%, 15% on that first day. And 3 years later, the car's worth half. Buildings aren't that bad, but they do definitely, there's been studies done that show within 5 to 10 years, people's perception of that building and what it's worth is somewhere between 20 and 25% less than what it would have been brand new. So you are going to see that decline. You obviously want to have enough land value there to see some capital growth in the property, but you do get depreciation benefits. You do get rental returns. So our philosophy is, as long as there's 50% land value, then that could still make a good investment. But you've got to understand, yes, you're not going to get as much capital growth as the older one with maybe 85% land value, but you'll get better rental returns, better depreciation. So it's really what's better for the individual. I've seen some individuals think that they've got the capacity to go and buy that old style house, but then they start getting stressed when the hot water heater breaks, when there's all these repairs and maintenance, and they end up exiting the market. Then that's the last thing you want to do. So assess your personality style, your risk profile, and then choose the right property for you. So overall, it's fundamentally, you're going to get more capital growth on something with more land value.
I hear you, especially when there was like so much rain and suddenly everything starts leaking and falling apart. Now, it's been a tall order for me to ask you to talk about all these property principles in less than 15 minutes, but it's been fantastic. Now, let's just do a quick roundup now on the emotional traps. So FOMO, fear of missing out. How can you kind of feel like you're not under pressure to buy something simply because someone said, oh, you better buy it now before someone else buys it?
Yeah, and we're certainly seeing that in a number of markets around Australia at the moment, particularly in Perth and Brisbane, where there's such short supply. So people are, the fear of missing out, they think the market's going to grow strongly, which it still likely will, but I've seen people overpay 50, 60, 100,000, and we see that in our buyer's agency team. They're telling me what some people are doing just because they've missed out on a couple. They're so afraid of missing out again. They emotionally can't handle it. That doesn't make sense. Every week there's more properties coming to the market. You will get one. You're not going to get a bargain in these markets. Absolutely not. But you should pay top dollar, but fair dollar. Don't go and overpay. And that's what we see. People with that FOMO, fear of missing out, overpaying. And that's not a good start to your property investment career.
Now, the second one, you made this up and it's in your book. It's the fear of overpaying, or FOOP. What does that mean?
Yeah, and that's an interesting one. So at the same time where some people have the fear of missing out and they go in and overpay, there's some people who can just never make that decision and they get so worried that they might, as I said, you can't get a bargain in this market. You've got to pay fair value. And so some people have this fear and they can't constantly put in offers that are way below where everyone else is and they're missing where the market's at. The markets are changing rapidly in some locations. So from that fear of overpaying, they end up doing nothing. They miss out. They don't want to pay top dollar. They don't want to pay the market. They end up doing nothing. And Michelle, that is actually worse than overpaying. I'd rather see, as much as I don't want anyone to overpay, I'd rather someone overpay a little bit on FOMO than miss out on FOOP and for the fear of overpaying because they never get into the market. So it's just trying to take out the emotion out of investing, trying to be logical. I know it's easier said than done, but if you're logical and you're looking at the market, see what the fair values are. You might miss out on a few when you put offers in, but you'll eventually get one if you're paying fair market price.
Fantastic. And last but not least is the fear of better options or FOBO. Again, you made this up, but I trust you. You've been in the business for 30 years. What is the fear of better options like?
Well, again, it's another reason people are indecisive. They go, oh, well, there could be a better one. Look, one thing about investment property, it's not your home where you're necessarily going to live. It's got to be a good, solid investment that's going to make you money. It doesn't have to be the best house and the best street. It's all about is always going to be something better that comes up. But you're looking at this as an investment opportunity and you've got to make that decision. So what we find is that the FOOP and FOBO, people get indecisive, don't end up making decisions. They sit out of the market and then 10 years later they go, oh, I wish I'd got in, and they miss out. So just try to remember as an investor, it's keep it logical. And yes, you will miss out on a few in the hot markets, but keep looking. You will find a great investment property. And fundamentally in Australia, we're undersupplied. We've got great capital cities. Lots of people want to move here. Fundamentally, we know that in 20 years' time, property prices are going to be significantly higher than they are now.
We've come to the end of the episode, but I am curious for someone who's maybe they have two or three residential investment properties under their belt. What would be the next level of property investing, especially if you're thinking about this as a kind of a passive income or a recurring income well into your retirement?
Yeah, Michelle, that's really important. And that's the premise, one of the fundamental premises of the book is residential property is a great place to start your investment career. It's easy to borrow against. You're more familiar with it. And you've got the tax benefits of negative gearing to help you pay for that property as you grow your wealth. But ultimately, why are we investing in property? Yes, to generate some wealth, but ultimately to get an income in our retirement phase. And when you look at it, residential around the country, the rental returns, particularly even if you have no debt, after the expenses, you're lucky to get maybe 2% yields in Sydney and Melbourne and potentially 3% in the other capital cities. That's just not enough to live on. Whereas in the commercial market, you can get 6-7% returns net of all the expenses and much better returns. So my philosophy is we start residential, we move after about 2 to 3 residential properties, then we move into commercial. And there are ways you can get into commercial for quite low numbers, $25,000 in funds, and I cover that in the book. But then you start to build a commercial portfolio, balance it out. And if you get the balance between the two, 50-50, you should net 4.5% net, which is a really solid return. But importantly, those assets will continue to grow. And a lot of us are going to be retired for 20, 30 years. So money in the bank, not here to give advice, of course, but money in the bank doesn't grow in value. It just gives you a bank term deposit, pays you 4 or 5%. It's not growing. But if you had property that was giving you a net yield of 4.5% and giving you capital growth on that, that will sustain you, hopefully, for your 20, 30 plus years of retirement.
Yes, I think we've heard the 4.5% compound and just kind of year on year is really very powerful. And yet there's no risk involved. It's not like a 100% or 160% in interest or return. But I have a feeling that I may need to kind of rewind and like listen to you again, because you went through the rapid fire of what net yield is and the 250-50. We're not all mathematicians and former chartered accountants, Damien, so I'll have to listen to that again. But this has been really good value, even for me. I think to recap, number one, try not to overpay So if the average price or yield is around 5%, you really want to get 2% above that. So you really need to be more ambitious and spend the time and effort, go to home opens to do that. Secondly, land value. What is 50% land value versus 85% land value? I think you need to look at that. And in choosing the lesser of two evils, you're better off overpaying, which is the fear of missing out, rather than the fear of better options where you end up 20 years later, you still haven't made an investment at all because you've kept looking. Damien, thank you once again for your time.
My pleasure, Michelle.
Now, before we go, don't forget that if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast, we'd love for you to recommend it to your own friends and family, or you can help us out by leaving a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. You can also send in any questions, comments, or even topics you'd love for us to cover through our dedicated email, podcast@moneymag.com.au. If you want to know more about what Damien's talking about with residential and commercial property and yield and land value, the Property Investing Roadmap book, How to Build an Income from Property for Life, is now available on Amazon. Finally, make sure you head over to moneymag.com.au for all the latest financial news and stories. Thank you once again for joining us today. That's it for this episode. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.